Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
This is the real life Ken. He wasn't a hero or a toy. We are diving deep into the chilling enigma of Kenneth Hansen today. A man whose public image was, well, the very embodiment of suburban perfection. Yet his private life concealed an unimaginable horror. Our mission today is really to extract the most unsettling insights from the sources you've shared with us, trying to untangle that profound gap between appearances and, frankly, a grotesque reality. We'll explore the fundamental vulnerability of trust and uncover the truly unsettling origins of a cultural icon. The initial mystery that grips anyone encountering the story is just profound, isn't it? How could a man so seemingly flawless, so perfectly integrated into his community, be capable of such monstrous acts? What were the hidden mechanisms that allowed such an impenetrable facade to persist, even, you know, in plain sight, blinding everyone to the truth for so long?
It's a classic, devastating case study in perception versus reality, isn't it? What we consistently observe in cases like Hansen's is the powerful halo effect really at play, where one overwhelmingly positive trait in this instance is outward perfection. It just colors all other perceptions. People aren't just willing to believe what's presented. They actively seek consistency. They often interpret ambiguous information in a way that confirms their initial positive impression. Hansen didn't just meet his community's ideal. He weaponized their cognitive shortcuts. He effectively became invisible in plain sight. This isn't just about deception. It's about the sophisticated exploitation of fundamental human biases, turning societal expectations into his most powerful shield.
So back in 1957, California, Kenneth Hansen didn't nearly live the American dream. It feels more like he meticulously constructed it, you know, brick by perfect brick, into his very public persona. He was a figure so ideal, he appeared to be plucked directly from an era-defining advertisement for the Golden Age. Our sources describe him as handsome, elegant, always smiling, but this wasn't just a casual observation, was it? This was deliberate, a constant and incredibly effective performance. That perpetual smile, for instance, it wasn't a sign of genuine warmth. It was a constant, almost unyielding expression. It served a dual chilling purpose. A social mask designed to inspire immediate unearned trust and simultaneously a disarming feature that actively repelled any flicker of suspicion. It's like his unwavering pleasantness became his greatest weapon against scrutiny.
What becomes immediately clear is the sheer, almost pathological dedication Hansen brought to maintaining this American ideal facade. This wasn't merely superficial vanity or, you know, a desire to fit in. From a psychological standpoint, it speaks to a deep, almost innate understanding of the societal expectations prevalent in that post-war suburban landscape. And more chillingly, a masterful ability to manipulate those expectations for personal concealment. He wasn't just blending in. He was actively constructing a narrative, a psychological false wall, really, within the community's collective mind. This narrative effectively inoculated him against any potential suspicion, transforming perceived virtues into an impenetrable shield, made it incredibly difficult for anyone to look beyond the surface.
And every single aspect of his life, from his front door to his, like, perfectly pressed clothes, contributed to this narrative. He resided in a modest, small, suburban house with his wife, Barbara, projecting an image of stable, respectable domesticity that, by many accounts, was the envy of their neighbors. They were consistently described as a quiet couple, always coordinated, always polite. But this wasn't just luck, was it? It pointed to a careful, almost staged presentation of their relationship to the outside world. Every interaction seemed devoid of conflict or discord or any hint of the darkness festering beneath the surface. It was a meticulously controlled theater of normalcy, every appearance precisely crafted to reinforce the image of perfect suburban bliss.
And to understand the power of this, you really have to consider the cultural context of 1957. This was an era of intense social conformity. Particularly in the burgeoning suburbs, the ideal family image wasn't just admired, it was almost seen as a civic duty. Hansen understood that by curating this perfect domestic scene, he tapped directly into a collective aspiration. It wasn't just about looking the part, it was about demonstrating an unwavering allegiance to the values of the time order, stability, respectability. This built a layer of social credit around him that, well, few would dare to question. It allowed him to move through daily life with an unearned trust that was practically ironclad. A devastating example of how deeply societal ideals can be exploited.
Even the smallest details were part of this performance. Our sources note that their garden looked perfect. Now, this might seem like a minor observation, but it's incredibly crucial, don't you think? It symbolized the almost obsessive control Hansen exercised over every single aspect of his life, right down to the minutiae. He ensured that not even a single weed could mar his manufactured image of domestic bliss and impeccable order. Every blade of grass, every perfectly trimmed bush, every blooming flower contributed to the illusion, reinforcing the unwavering narrative of a man with absolutely nothing to hide, a man who epitomized absolute perfection. His entire environment was essentially an extension of his mask.
That perfect garden is, in many ways, the ultimate metaphor for his elaborate construction. It suggests a profound, almost compulsive need for control, not just over his immediate surroundings, but over the perceptions of everyone in his orbit. The more flawless the outward appearance, the less likely anyone is to question what lies beneath, what might be hidden in the shadows of that meticulously maintained facade. This human tendency to equate external order with internal integrity is a profound vulnerability, one that someone like Hansen would expertly exploit. It's a chilling reminder that sometimes the most dangerous individuals are those who are masters of blending in, of becoming utterly unremarkable in their perceived perfection, so much so that even their home acts as a stage for their performance.
Yet behind that perfect smile and manicured lawn, an insidious pattern began to emerge. It subtly eroded the community's foundational sense of security. Initially, not a single whisper of suspicion fell on Kenneth Hansen, which is a testament to the power of his carefully constructed image. Over time, women in their social circle began to disappear. This wasn't a sudden, isolated incident that would immediately draw attention. It was a creeping, horrifying pattern. It likely went unnoticed as a linked series for a considerable time. The disappearances were unsettlingly close to home, a neighbor, a coworker, one of Barbara's friends. This proximity makes the vanishing acts even more terrifying for us looking back. It suggests the threat was not from some unknown outsider, but from within their most trusted community, from someone they knew and, most devastatingly, presumably welcomed into their lives.
The insidious nature of these disappearances, right within their immediate social orbit, it really highlights a profound societal blind spot. Psychologically, it's often easier for people to compartmentalize seemingly unrelated events rather than confront the deeply unsettling possibility. The possibility that a trusted, ideal member of their community could be the common denominator in a series of horrific crimes. This cognitive bias allows a perpetrator to operate almost in plain sight, as the community's perception of him filters out any contradictory evidence. This is where Hansen's perfect image not only shielded him from external suspicion, but also served to tragically isolate his own wife, Barbara, turning her into an unheard prophet of her own impending doom.
And the method of abduction only added to the eerie silence surrounding these vanishings. There were no sounds, no struggle, just gone. This speaks volumes about Hansen's meticulous planning and unsettling efficiency, or perhaps even more chillingly, the victim's initial trust in him. They might have been lured, invited in, or simply disarmed by his charm. Their disappearances seemed like sudden, inexplicable vanishings rather than violent crimes, which further obscured the truth and delayed any real investigation. While the community was grappling with this unsettling mystery, Barbara, Kenneth's wife, was living a private nightmare. Seeing beyond the smile he presented to the world, she carried a truly disturbing detail that haunted her nights.
Barbara's experience is such a tragic illustration of how the very structure of trust, especially within a domestic setting, can become a prison. Her observations about the lack of struggle, combined with her internal terror, suggest a profound psychological manipulation at play. It's a devastating example of how the narrative of the disgruntled wife or runaway is often a far easier and, well, more comfortable story for society to accept than confronting the terrifying reality that evil can wear such a charming, utterly convincing mask. Especially when that evil resides within the supposed sanctity of the suburban home, it challenges deeply held ideals about safety and trust, and inadvertently providing a perfect cover for individuals like Hansen, allowing their atrocities to escalate.
She harbored this truly disturbing detail about her husband. Barbara said Kenneth stared at her at night, studied her, never blinked. This chilling observation reveals a predatory, objectifying gaze, a stark and terrifying contrast to the loving, perfect husband he pretended to be in daylight. It speaks volumes about her isolated terror, trapped with a man whose true nature only she seemed to perceive. She also noted with growing trepidation that he spent hours in the basement. This seemingly innocuous detail presented by Barbara foreshadowed the horrifying truth that would later be discovered within that very space. a secret world hidden beneath their perfect home, a private domain that even she, his wife, was apparently excluded from.
This is where the cognitive dissonance for the community must have been immense. How do people, and even individuals like Barbara's friends or family, how do they rationalize away inconsistencies when confronted with someone who so perfectly embodies societal ideals? Barbara's deeply unsettling observations about his predatory gaze and his secretive hours in the basement. They were dismissed precisely because they didn't fit the perfect Ken narrative. It speaks to a collective psychological defense mechanism, a profound human tendency to protect our established perceptions, where it's almost too frightening to accept that someone so good could be so monstrous, leading to the tragic dismissal of critical red flags and leaving Barbara utterly alone in her fear.
And then came the tragic culmination of Barbara's fear. She, too, became one of the missing women. Kenneth's reaction was chilling in its casualness, almost rehearsed. He simply stated, "Kenneth said she left without a word," implying abandonment, a common and easily digestible narrative for a disappearing wife back then. This dismissive explanation further solidified his image as the unfortunate victim of a personal misfortune, not a perpetrator. But the image that truly captures the profound horror and his complete psychological detachment is this. Our sources recount that he kept mowing the lawn, smiling as if nothing happened.
Yeah.
This image is just profoundly unsettling. It demonstrates Hansen's complete lack of remorse, his unwavering ability to maintain his perfect performance, even as his crimes escalated. He was literally tending to the perfect garden while his wife was gone, a silent testament to his unyielding psychopathic control.
That chilling routine of him mowing the lawn, still smiling, perfectly encapsulates the essence of his psychopathy. It's not just a simple lack of empathy. It's a textbook example of several key psychopathic traits. The superficial charm maintaining the facade, a pathological need for control, and a complete absence of remorse. For Hansen, the performance of normalcy wasn't just a cover. It was an integral part of his identity. It allowed him to operate with a terrifying emotional detachment, even as his crimes escalated. It reveals a mind where external order and the maintenance of his public image trump all moral considerations, all human connection. This particular act is a stark demonstration of what criminal psychologists refer to as affective deficit, a profound inability to experience or even feign genuine emotion, even in moments of escalating crisis or profound personal loss, a loss he himself orchestrated.
Hansen's meticulously constructed world, built brick by perfect brick, it was destined to shatter eventually. The critical turning point finally arrived 3 years later.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
When another woman vanished. This time, however, the disappearance provided the undeniable crack in his impenetrable image. She was last seen entering Kenneth's house, establishing a direct, undeniable link to Hansen himself. This wasn't merely suspicion or circumstantial evidence. It was concrete, pivotal information needed to move beyond the realm of doubt and initiate a formal, targeted investigation. For the first time, his meticulously crafted facade was not just questioned, but irrevocably compromised.
It's really remarkable how long that level of deception could be maintained. The fact that such a direct link was needed, you know, a witness seeing the victim enter his home, speaks volumes about the enduring power of his public persona. It suggests that without this irrefutable piece of evidence, the community's deeply ingrained belief in his ideal image might have continued to shield him, allowing his reign of terror to persist indefinitely. This highlights the incredible difficulty of discerning truth when it's cloaked in such an effective illusion, and how societal trust can be profoundly misplaced when an individual is a master of impression management.
With this new, irrefutable evidence, the breach of his suburban sanctity became inevitable. This time, the police got a warrant. This wasn't just a casual inquiry. It represented the official legal challenge to Hansen's assumed innocence. It signaled the beginning of the end for his reign of terror. The investigation, guided by Barbara's earlier dismissed observations, naturally led to the basement, the very place she had noted he spent hours. That hidden private space, yeah. Once just a curious detail, now became the focal point of intense, terrifying suspicion. The room he retreated to for hours, now the literal and figurative heart of the investigation.
When we place this in a broader psychological context, the basement itself becomes an incredibly potent symbol. It's the concealed space beneath the pristine surface, the sort of subconscious realm of a seemingly perfect individual. Barbara's earlier tragically dismissed observations about his time spent there now echo with chilling foresight, revealing her unique, terrifying insight into the hidden depths of her husband's depravity. The warrant wasn't just a legal document. It was the formal permission to pull back the carefully curated layers of Hansen's life and confront the abhorrent truth that lay beneath. It's the moment the system, however belatedly, begins to see through the illusion, peeling back the carefully constructed reality to reveal the monster's truth.
The tension must have been just unbearable as law enforcement descended into that basement, searching for answers, hoping against hope that Barbara's fears were unfounded. What they discovered was nothing short of horrific, shattering the illusion of the perfect neighbor. In the basement, behind a false wall, they found 6 bodies, including Barbara. This detail is absolutely critical. It illustrates not only the sheer premeditation of his crimes, but his chilling desire for ultimate concealment. The audacity of hiding his victims within his own perfect suburban home, just feet from where he entertained guests, is almost inconceivable. The false wall wasn't merely a structural element. It was a visceral, physical manifestation of his entire life's deception, a concrete barrier mirroring the psychological one he had built around himself, literally walling off his monstrous acts from the public eye.
The false wall itself is a perfect, almost too perfect metaphor for Hansen's entire existence. A meticulously crafted barrier designed to hide the abhorrent truth behind a facade of normalcy and perfection. It speaks to a deep, calculated psychopathy, where the illusion of order and control was paramount, even over the lives of his victims. The discovery of 6 bodies, including his wife, doesn't just confirm the serial nature of his claims. It underscores the absolute horror and a profound betrayal of the trust he so carefully cultivated. It paints a terrifying picture of a mind operating with absolute detachment, viewing human lives as mere obstacles to be removed and concealed, meticulously without a shred of remorse.
And perhaps most disturbing of all was Hansen's unwavering performance, even in the face of absolute exposure, surrounded by the undeniable evidence of his monstrous acts. When confronted, he maintained his serene, perfect facade. He didn't resist, just smiled, impeccable. This is perhaps the most unsettling detail of all, even as his carefully constructed world crumbled around him, as the horrifying truth was laid bare for all to see. Hansen offered a chilling final performance of composure and profound lack of remorse. It signified a complete and utter psychological disconnect. A man whose mask had become his reality, so deeply ingrained that it never truly broke, even when he was finally and irrevocably unmasked.
That unyielding smile upon discovery is an act of defiance, but a chilling affirmation of his internal world, a testament to the absolute control he maintained over his external presentation. It speaks to a complete absence of empathy, a profound psychopathy where the performance is everything, even in the face of absolute, irrefutable exposure. It's the ultimate demonstration of a personality so fractured that the internal horror doesn't even register as external distress or emotion. This makes you wonder, what does it mean when the mask never truly drops? When the wearer maintains their composure and almost pristine detachment, even as they are completely and utterly unmasked, with their unspeakable deeds laid bare? It challenges our fundamental understanding of human emotion and reaction.
Now, years after Kenneth Hansen was sentenced to life, the story takes an incredibly jarring, unexpected twist. Connecting his dark legacy to a seemingly innocent cultural icon that would enter millions of homes across America. Time moved on, but his peculiar legacy, perhaps unwittingly, lingered. Years later, a toy company launched a new doll. This doll was described as smooth, clean-cut, flawless, qualities that deliberately and uncannily echoed Kenneth Hansen's own appearance, and the meticulously cultivated image he presented to the world. It's hard to imagine a more perfect, disturbing parallel.
It's an almost poetic, if macabre, irony, isn't it?
Yeah.
The doll's characteristics, smooth, clean-cut, flawless, they perfectly mirror the very facade that allowed Hansen to operate undetected for so long. It highlights how powerful surface-level aesthetics can be, even when entirely detached from any deeper understanding of the individual behind them. It becomes a testament to the enduring allure of a perfect look in our society, how it can be distilled, admired, and reproduced entirely separate from its dark origins. The image itself takes on a life of its own, independent of the horrifying reality it once obscured.
And then came the name. The doll was named Ken. The immediate visceral parallel with Kenneth Hansen's first name creates an initial jolt of recognition, an unsettling resonance that is hard to shake for anyone aware of his story. But the truly shocking revelation, the critical and deeply disturbing piece of evidence, was found later in a designer's notes. It was one simple, almost casual line. Inspiration, Kenneth H. Impeccable look, American ideal. It's an explicit, undeniable link.
This is truly where the narrative becomes complex and deeply unsettling. This single line of the designer's notes explicitly states, inspiration, Kenneth H., impeccable look, American ideal. But this immediately compels us to ask, was the doll company or the specific designer actually aware of who Kenneth H. was beyond his look? Was this a superficial aesthetic reference, a kind of cultural sampling of a perceived ideal that had become pervasive? Or was it a deeply disturbing, perhaps even conscious nod to his dark history, using his carefully crafted public persona as a template? The phrasing strongly suggests an admiration for the image, not the man. Yet the origin remains profoundly disturbing. It forces us to grapple with the idea that an aesthetic could be admired and replicated, even if the person behind it embodied pure evil.
Let's truly unpack this. The sheer audacity, the disturbing, almost macabre irony of finding the specific, explicit inspiration for a children's doll. It feels almost too incredible, too wild to believe. That a man who embodied such unspeakable evil, a serial killer who meticulously concealed bodies behind a false wall in his suburban home, could, through his outward presentation, become the very blueprint for an icon of American childhood perfection. It forces us to confront the profound disconnect between how we present ourselves and what truly lies within, and how terrifyingly easily one can be mistaken for the other, especially when that outward appearance aligns so perfectly with societal ideals.
When we place this in a broader cultural context, the note focuses entirely on his impeccable look and American ideal. This strongly suggests the inspiration was indeed drawn from his carefully constructed public persona, his facade, rather than any conscious awareness of his hidden depravity. It's an unsettling testament to the power of an image to completely obscure reality, even to the point where it can be innocently repurposed and idealized. It speaks to a kind of cultural blindness, where the public's perception of him became immortalized rather than the horrific truth. It's a compelling example of how a compelling surface can overshadow and erase a devastating underlying reality in the collective consciousness.
It's more than just a moment of cognitive dissonance, wouldn't you say? To realize that the very qualities that made him so dangerous, his charming demeanor, his flawless appearance, his perfect adherence to societal norms, were the exact attributes that were consciously or unconsciously admired, and then replicated in a toy meant for children. It's an almost perfect encapsulation of the superficiality of appearance and the terrifying ease with which we can be deceived by it, even unknowingly perpetuating a legacy that should only be remembered with horror.
This makes one really consider our cultural tendency to admire superficial aesthetics, often without digging deeper into their origins or underlying realities. What does it truly say about us that an impeccable look can be separated so entirely from the character of the person possessing it, to the point of becoming an aspirational model? Is it a testament to the sheer, almost hypnotic power of a convincing image, to its ability to transcend even the most heinous acts and seep into the very fabric of popular culture? Or is it a disturbing oversight by the doll's creators, a kind of profound cultural blindness to the darker currents running beneath the surface of perceived perfection? It compels us, the listener, you, to critically analyze how we consume and interpret symbols of perfection in our daily lives, what insidious truths might be lurking behind them.
As we bring this deep dive to a close, we are left to reflect on the enduring, almost haunting power of Kenneth Hansen's facade, and the deeply disturbing nature of his legacy. His impeccable look and his uncanny embodiment of the American ideal not only allowed him to commit horrific crimes undetected for years, but also, paradoxically, became a source of inspiration, however unwitting or superficial. It's a stark testament to how deeply ingrained visual ideals can be, and how they can persist, morphing into new forms long after the horrifying truth has been revealed.
The story of Kenneth Hansen forces us to confront an uncomfortable truth, that the most terrifying monsters are not always grotesque, with obvious tells or outwardly menacing features. They can be incredibly, disarmingly, and impeccably human. His unwavering smile, that constant, almost pathological performance of pleasantness, it outlived his victims. In some ways, continues to challenge our fundamental perceptions of truth, trust, and the very nature of evil itself. It's a smile that becomes a profound symbol of the pervasive deception he perpetrated, a chilling reminder that appearances can be profoundly, tragically misleading.
We've explored the profound contrast between the model neighbor and the serial killer, the real man and the plastic icon he unknowingly inspired. It's a story that compels us to look closer, to question what we see, and to understand the immense, almost frightening power of a carefully crafted image in a world often too eager to believe in perfection.
This raises an important question for all of us long after this deep dive concludes.
Yeah.
In a world so intensely focused on outward appearances, on curated images, and meticulously presented ideals, how vigilantly do we truly examine what lies beneath the surface? And how many perfect images, even today, might be concealing untold horrors, just waiting to be discovered, silently echoing the smile of a man who was anything but ideal?
His smile outlived his victims in plastic.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.